Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And here's a preview of what's coming up in today's program. In Nigeria, a fuel shortage leaves angry motorists stranded at empty petrol stations.
I am supposed to be on honeymoon with my lady here, my wife, as you can see. But we have to take some fuel again before we can proceed on honeymoon.
Two former detainees of the US-operated Guantanamo Bay detention facility have been resettled in Senegal. Should the Senegalese be concerned?
They are not ordinary people. Having been in Afghanistan, it makes people think that they are very great jihadists.
And there is a new government in Central African Republic, but they face a daunting challenge ahead.
Its crucial next test will be the disarmament, demobilization of militia fighters from both sides and their reintegration.
Just some of the stories we have lined up for you this Wednesday, the 13th of April. Good morning and welcome to DW's Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu in Bonn, Germany.
Top story.
The mother of all ironies. Nigeria is Africa's leading oil producer, but for the last 3 weeks, Africa's most populous nation has been hit by one of the worst fuel shortages in years. Angry motorists have been spending the night in their cars parked in queues at petrol stations, only to be told the next morning that supplies have run out. Despite pumping 1.8 million barrels of crude a day, Nigeria imports most of its fuel. That is because not one of its four oil refineries is working. And to pay for those oil imports, Nigeria needs dollars, but the greenbacks are also in short supply because the price of crude has dropped steeply since 2014. Ubale Musa reports from Abuja on the toll that this is taking on the average Nigerian motorist.
Open the border. It is chaotic scenes such as this one that you will find at nearly all filling stations here in Abuja. It takes an average of 3 to 5 hours to buy the all-important commodity in the transport system, petrol. The scarcity of petrol in the country had a negative impact in all economic sectors. Adeniyi Oluwafemi had to abandon office work to join the queue, and he tells me he had been waiting for over 5 hours.
We don't even know what is really happening there. The line is not moving at all. I'm not really, really happy. I'm supposed to be in office by now. And they have been calling me in office. I'm just trying to tell them that, please, you have time with me, but I just want to beg for it and come back to the office.
Apart from crippling the conduct of official business in Abuja, the nation's administrative capital, the scarcity has also inflicted untold hardship on other sectors of life. Mr. Adachi James Jones had to postpone his planned honeymoon to be able to queue for the fuel together with his wife.
I got married this Saturday that passed. Not for the fuel I got while on queue before that time. I wouldn't have been able to manage the runaround program until I got married. Now it's after my wedding. I am supposed to be on honeymoon with my lady here, my wife, as you can see. But we have to take some fuel again, get some runaround, settle down before we can proceed on honeymoon.
The financial crisis, which has hampered the supply of the much required foreign currency to enable marketers order for the fuel from outside the country, coupled with the shutdown of the refineries, are blamed for the fuel scarcity. Some Nigerians are also heaping blames on Buhari's government. But according to Dalari Garba-Pasali, the Secretary General of the Independent Marketers Association of Nigeria, IPMAN, which controls over 80% of the retail outlets in the country, the new government is not to blame for the current woes that the country is facing at the moment.
There is a time that we are even begging people to come and take petrol in our filling stations. You all know it. But this is a situation that is inherited from the past administration. It's not the doing of this government, as a matter of fact. Is something that is accumulative. It is a neglect of all our refineries. And without giving more consideration or encouraging private participation in building new refineries, the best bet now is to allow private people to build their own modular refineries, and then government should remove their hand in oil business.
Considered Africa's biggest oil producer for decades, Nigeria has been grappling with persistent fuel scarcity. There seems no quick solution in the near future.
Ubale Musa reporting in Abuja. Let's delve deeper into this fuel crisis in Nigeria. One of the reasons already mentioned is the shortage of foreign currency, specifically dollars, since crude oil is traded in American dollars. My colleague Mark Colwell has been speaking to Amara Nwankpa, Director of Public Policy Initiatives, for the Shehu Musa Yaradua Foundation to hear what he thinks could be the source of the fuel scarcity.
I think that it's an uber conservative approach by the federal government because, you know, unless they're lying to us, there's over $27 billion in our foreign reserves. So there is, to some extent, foreign exchange available to the central bank to fund certain imports. But what the government has done is it's taken a very conservative approach to managing the currency because it's afraid to devalue. And that's what's triggering what I think is artificial scarcity. But if the government had devalued the naira, then the rate of demand for the dollar would have reduced commensurately. And that would ease the pressure on the foreign reserves. But that wasn't what was done. And so, yes, the scarcity is artificial, although occasioned, again, by the low oil prices.
Why doesn't President Buhari let the naira depreciate against the dollar? What is stopping him from doing that?
He says that it is, moderating the naira, in his words, to allow it to depreciate, which, you know, if you ask me, is not sound economics. But there is this sentimental attachment to the value of the naira as an indication of how strong the economy is doing, not as a way of protecting the economy from the inflationary pressure that is occasioned by low oil prices and constantly increased demand for import.
There are long queues at petrol stations. Is this giving foreign investors in Nigeria cold feet?
Well, we've seen a lot of investors exit. The stock market has lost huge value over the last year. We're hearing that Nigeria is getting delisted from certain indices. So definitely there is a strong indication that foreign investors are beginning to shy away from Nigeria as a result of this economic policies.
It's been said that President Buhari faced a similar economic crisis when he was Nigeria's military ruler more than 30 years ago, and his response to that crisis back then was more or less the same as it is today. Do you find such parallels helpful, instructive?
Yes, I think that it's depressing, the parallels actually, just depressing because you can predict his approach to these issues. And if it is going to continue in the same way he did in 1984, then, you know, we're in for a long night.
Amara Nwankpa, the Director of Public Policy Initiatives for the Shehu Musa Yaradua Foundation.
News, analysis, and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
Turning the page, the Central African Republic on Monday unveiled its new cabinet. President Touadéra appointed Simplice Saranji as his prime minister. Saranji was the president's former campaign manager. All in all, Touadéra's new cabinet is comprised of 23 members, with none drawn from the Muslim and Christian militias who are behind the violence that has plagued the country. Does the new government have what it takes to reconcile this war-torn nation? Mark Caldwell put that question to Paul Melly, Associate Fellow with the Africa Programme at Chatham House in the UK.
I think it probably can. The composition of the cabinet is pretty much as one would expect, actually, for a country using the CAR's electoral system. That is to say, a two-round system of elections, where in the first ballot, you get people who don't have much prospect of being elected president, running as candidates anyway, to win a few percent of the vote, and then, as it were, bargain for a role in the eventual government that is formed by the election winner. The other key point is that there are three Muslim ministers in the government. This is very important because Mr. Touadéra enjoyed quite a lot of support from people who had supported the Akibalaka Christian militia, or at least been a bit sympathetic towards them during the conflict of the last 2 years. And Mr. Touadéra set out a message of reconciliation, and it was very important that that was actually reflected in the composition of the government. And he's also made public gestures in this regard. He recently visited the mosque in Bangui. Again,
in a gesture, really, to reach out to the Muslim community and show that they too, although a minority, very much have their place in the new CAR.
But none of these ministers are drawn from the Christian or the Muslim militia, are they?
Well, that's really because Christian and Muslim militia movements weren't really a reflection of political factions. The Seleka Muslim rebels were basically formed by a group of warlords who recruited both among discontented people in the Muslim community of northern CAR, but also mercenaries, fighters from neighboring countries, such as the Darfur region of Sudan or Chad. But the advantage, the positive aspect of that, is that most of the political class were also, as it were, clean of blame for the awful violence of the last 2 years, and were in a position to be able to be brought into government and work together.
What changes can Central Africans expect to see in their lives in the weeks and months ahead as a result of the appointment of this new government?
Well, I think there are really two things. The first is, if the peace process is sustained, and its crucial next test will be the disarmament, demobilization of militia fighters from both sides and their reintegration into either government security forces of one kind or another, or into civilian life. If that's sustained, then we can look forward to government slowly rebuilding public services and public administration. And that, in a sense, will be the dual test.
Paul Melly, Associate Fellow with the Africa Programme at Chatham House in the UK. You're listening to Africa Link, live from DW Studios in Bonn.
Behind the headlines.
The Senegalese government has been seeking to reassure its citizens after it agreed to take in two former detainees from the Guantanamo Bay detention facility. The US transferred the two detainees to Senegal for humanitarian reasons. The two Libyan men spent nearly 14 years in custody at the US base in Cuba without charge. The men's arrival comes amid growing concern about Islamic extremism in Senegal, a moderate, predominantly Muslim country on West Africa's coastline. However, Senegal is now widely considered a possible next target after attacks in Mali, Burkina Faso and Ivory Coast. Emmanuel Londe goes behind the headlines to narrate how the two men have been received in Senegal.
The two men, Salem Abdou Salem Garebi and Omar Khalif Mohamed Aboubakar Mahja Omar, spent nearly one decade and a half in Guantanamo Bay prison without charge or trial. Thought to be members of the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group with links to Al-Qaeda by the US, they were jailed in Cuba during what the Bush administration called its war on terror. Cleared for transfer by the US government, the two Libyans, aged 55 and the other around 43, arrived in Senegal around 10 days ago for humanitarian resettlement. This comes as President Obama rushes to close the controversial US prison before leaving office next year. Speaking on the sidelines of an opening ceremony, Manka Ndiaye, Senegal's Minister of Foreign Affairs, is keen to reassure the public.
The fact that Senegal agreed to receive these former detainees from Guantanamo prison simply falls within humanitarian assistance. It is military resettlement sought by the U.S. administration.
Senegal's top envoy added that the men are ex-detainees and not former convicts, as they have not been charged with anything.
To date, they have not been found responsible of anything. No charges were brought against them. And we also drew from the conclusions from the periodic review committee set up by the U.S. administration that concluded that these men should not stay any longer in prison and they could either return to Libya. But you know what the situation is like in Libya today. So they chose Senegal as their resettlement land. Senegal is part of a group of 27 countries that has so far agreed to host former Guantanamo detainees. And for a reminder, these people are free, they are not in prison.
Ndiaye also said the two Libyans are free to return to Libya at any time they choose to.
si elle souhaite demain.
These people are staying in Senegal and can return to their homeland if they wish to, and if there are good conditions for them to do so. But for the moment, Senegal has accepted to offer them asylum in line with the fundamental principles of international human rights.
The move has received mixed reviews in the Senegalese press, with some papers claiming that Senegal is pandering to the West, while others say the move is compassionate. On the street, reactions are somewhat calm.
I'm a little bit scared because they should have stayed in the United States, in my opinion. With the problems of terrorism and jihadists, I'm scared they should have stayed in the United States. President Obama could take them in. They shouldn't have come to Senegal. Even if they wanted to come to Senegal, you know, Senegal is a small country. It's not like the United States. I'm scared. Deep down, I'm scared.
We are safe. It's a humanitarian problem. And as it was said that they had no charges against them, then I don't think there is a serious problem. It's a humanitarian problem, so we try and welcome them.
Why is your Senegal c'est le pays de la teranga?
Yes, here in Senegal, it's the country of hospitality. And if someone wants to come and live here peacefully, there is no problem. But for anything else, then no, we don't need that really.
I have total trust in our government. I'm scared of nothing, because it wasn't overnight that we were told, you're being sent two men who are from Guantanamo and who have done 14 years in prison. Also, I don't think that President Obama would send us terrorists.
Monsieur Obama aussi ne nous envoie pas des terroristes.
For Alioune Tine, Regional Director of Amnesty International for West and Central Africa, resettling the two men is not a threat to Senegal's national security. He believes the two men should be seen as refugees.
You are not inducted, you are not condemned, you are free, you are like a refugee. But I think that they are not ordinary people. Having been in Afghanistan, it makes people think that they are very great jihadists. They come from Afghanistan, from Iraq, and so on. We have to give second chance to people like that.
89 prisoners now remain at Guantanamo Bay Prison. The US says it wants to relocate up to 35 prisoners to their homelands or other countries by the summer.
That report was compiled by Emmanuel Londé.
Listen to Africa Link whenever you want. Sign up for our podcast at dw.com/Africa Link Podcast.
The Munich Security Conference, which is a well-known international platform for dialogue on foreign and security policy, is to stage its first ever event in Africa. Around 60 senior leaders from Africa, Europe and the US will gather in Addis Ababa tomorrow, Thursday, and ending on Friday to exchange ideas in an informal setting. The meeting will be chaired by the German diplomat Wolfgang Ischinger, and I asked him why they had chosen Addis Ababa as a venue.
It's the seat of the African Union. We believe that it is important that the capacity of the African community of states to act together, to have a security organization that works, that functions, is important. German government has been actively supporting such efforts, including the TANA Forum, on the eve of which our conference is being organized later this week. So choosing at this point as our first entry point into Africa, Ethiopia, I think was an obvious choice.
All right. Now, what are the main critical issues that are going to be addressed in the conference?
Well, let me single out two primary issues. The first one is terrorism and fighting terrorism. I think most people in Europe are not aware that the number of victims that, for example, Boko Haram has produced in various places in Africa considerably exceeds the number of victims which the Islamic State, which has been in the headlines so much for good reasons, obviously, has produced in Iraq, Syria, and other countries in the region. So the question of extremism, the question of feeding grounds for terrorism, for extremist groups, is a question that Africa and Europe need to tackle together. For Germans in particular, it is something new, something we, our voters, need to understand and digest, that there is a good reason why more and more German soldiers are now being posted to Mali to help build up security forces there that can actually defend the country and maintain stability. And of course, the same is true in a number of other African countries. The second one is in a way linked to the first one. It's the refugee issue. And while we're currently dealing in Europe, of course, primarily with refugees that come from the crisis spots in the conflicts in Syria, we need to be aware that the number of potential refugees from African crises can and probably will rise considerably over the next years or decades, given the demographic developments in Africa, given economic security perspectives. There are a number of countries that are models of growth, that are exploding in terms of productivity. Good signs need to be discussed, and we need to find ways to demonstrate to other African countries who are lagging behind how they can join the movement forward for the benefit of their own population.
Sounds very, very well. But what about the issue of good governance and impunity? I mean, we just had recently the International Criminal Court dropping the charges against Kenya's Deputy President William Ruto. And the African Union has been calling for most of its member states to pull out from the Rome Statute. Will that be also on the agenda?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of my good friends, is Fatou Bensouda from the International Criminal Court. And she is a very powerful speaker. I've invited her a couple of times already to our large conference in Munich. She'll be there, and so will be a number of foundations and civil society representatives. In other words, we will have plenty of opportunity to discuss with our African participants the issues pertaining to human rights, to good governance, to the respect of international institutions, the reasons why we believe that the International Criminal Court and its creation was actually a step forward for humanity and for global governance and should be supported rather than marginalized.
Wolfgang Ischinger, chairperson of the Munich Security Conference.
Opinion.
In Opinion this week, we would like to hear your views on the fuel shortage in Nigeria. Who or what do you think is to blame for this fuel crisis? We also reported on the resettling of two former detainees from Guantanamo Bay to Senegal. And do you think more African countries should be offering asylum to more Guantanamo detainees? Do let us know your thoughts on a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, or an SMS to country code 49160 957 59510. We shall select some of your comments to be aired this Friday on Your Say.
Harare, Nairobi, or Abuja, Africa Link's correspondents bring Africa stories to you.
And before we go, here's another reminder of some of our main stories. A fuel shortage in Nigeria has left many motorists stranded in Africa's biggest oil producer. The Central African Republic's newly unveiled government faces the tough task of reconciling a deeply divided nation. And you've been hearing from Germany's diplomat Wolfgang Ischinger on the significance of staging the Munich Security Conference first ever event in Africa. More coverage on the continent, visit www.dw.com/Africa. Thank you for your company, and until tomorrow, same time, I'm Crispin Mwakideu. Have a good day and take care.